Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. I'm sitting here thinking of what to talk about. The word that comes up in my mind is Saṅvēga. Sort of a sense of, usually translated as a sense of urgency. Sense of urgency to put the teachings into practice, sense of urgency to establish oneself in that which is free from suffering, a sense of urgency to bring forth those qualities of goodness within the heart that are a refuge. It's so easy to say, in terms of our consciousness or our minds, in any given moment we've got an extraordinary range of choices. And we can make choices which will create more suffering for ourselves, more suffering for others, or we can make choices that will attenuate suffering, and actually not only attenuate it, actually end it and create well-being and happiness for oneself, well-being and happiness for others. Now, this is a possibility. It may not ever look like that, but it just this is a possibility. The capacity for the human being to create suffering is quite wondrous and marvelous. But to and to recognize that we're definitely making those choices, and oftentimes it doesn't feel like that. Your typical being in samsara is always feels impinged on or somehow threatened or somehow going along according to their own biases, preconceptions, ideas, views, desires, attachments, cravings, whatever. And it all seems reasonable at the time. But it's when we sort of have moments of clarity and insight that we realize that, well, we can actually, we don't have to get caught in those things which are continually perpetuating a feeling of discontent and dissatisfaction or suffering. We can actually make the alternative choices. So there's a sense of urgency comes up to really be attentive to the those qualities of you know, what do we, how do we put our, you make our practice count? How do we make our each moment count? The Buddha has us recollect and reflect on those things which are what is the benefit of a situation, or the advantage, or the disadvantage, or the danger, the painful aspect of things, and and what's the way out? What's the release? So that and the Buddha sort of looks back in the world and sort of says, well, if there wasn't, an attractive, beneficial aspect to things, beings wouldn't be stuck in the world. They wouldn't be stuck in their habits. Wouldn't be stuck in their conditioning. It's that pull, that which is attractive and compelling. But it's because there is a painful aspect or a disadvantage to things, that beings do get sort of wake up and sort of say, oh, I think I've had enough. Look for an alternative. And that there actually is a way out. There actually is a way of living which is peaceful, is harmonious, is free from suffering. So that to recollect that, you know, what looks like right, true, pleasant, attractive, compelling, you know, is that all there is to the picture? Or is there some other aspect to it? And similarly, I mean, if all there was the painful, the unattractive, the unpleasant side of things, then of course beings wouldn't have the kind of impetus to cultivate the good. So it's how we look at it, and how we use things, how we, you know, one can be. Ajahn Chah would always, you know, have us look, you know, you just be attentive to, you know, what are the, you know, there's everything is part of everything else. He said, like, it isn't as if say, like, food is a good example. Is there just something good about it? Because we're hungry and we want it and it tastes good to us. Or what happens when we have too much of it? Or too much of the wrong thing? And then we get sick, we have a sore stomach. And then it has its drawback to it. Or something that we think is just absolutely unbearable, unpleasant. Is it that way all the time? Or is there some benefit to it? It's like in Thailand, they've got this particular vine that you can either sort of roast it, toast it on it on its own, or you can boil it up into a concoction. Or however you do it, it's absolutely foul. It's absolutely foul and bitter. It's just awful. Well, that's how it appears to be. But it's an extraordinarily good medicine. It's a really good tonic. It really helps to balance the system. So, something that seems absolutely foul, awful, terrible, nasty, it has its good element in it as well. So that being able to look at our experiences and look at the engagement with the world around us and seeing, what are the benefits and what are the drawbacks? And we always have to keep bringing it. What is the way out? What's the way out of this? Because if we don't look for a way out, and the Buddha points to the way out as being the freedom from desires and attachments. This is sort of the crux of the matter. If we're constantly functioning from the position of our desires and our attachments, our preferences and our opinions, then we're always going to either be enjoying the benefits of something or feeling oppressed by the drawbacks of another thing, but we're going to keep spinning around in that. So to reflect on how do we, am I getting caught in something? And what is the capacity to get caught? Because even when we think we're doing something right and it feels good, it feels pleasant, are our antenna out for being attentive to the fact that there might be a painful side to it, a drawback that's there? And as long as we're able to be bringing up that sense of what's the way out, and really reflecting on, well, what attachments and desires are functioning, then there is a possibility of sidestepping the problematic nature of human existence. Not always running into the brick wall of suffering. So that too, be reflecting and considering. It's because if we don't really look for the way out, then we're really stuck, if say, a bird in a cage, and even if you, you know, decorate the cage and bring it nice food all the time, it's still a bird in a cage. Still a, you know, sort of, and you know, one might feel comfortable for the, you know, if that's what one's experience is being stuck in a cage. Then it's, you know, even if it's, even if the bars of the cage are nicely decorated and you get choice food or whatever, then it's still, one feels trapped. And it's certainly you know, the feeling that the heart experiences when we're not free, when we're not, we say, when we're still living life from our under the sway of our desires and our attachments. Or the example of a frog that, you know, when it gets used to being in water, if you put a frog in cool water and then put heat on, and it'll stay in there. It won't go. It won't leave. Sort of gets used to the increasing temperature, and it'll just stay there until. Whereas if it sort of fell or jumped and landed in hot water, it would leap out immediately. And oftentimes we get used to the suffering, used to the difficulty and the pain, and we find excuses for it or find rationalize it or whatever. And we don't make the efforts to free ourselves. So that too, and to really reflect on those things which are a disadvantage, that is painful, and see it clearly. Why is it like that? How does it come to be? What are the causes and conditions that bring that about? You know, what benefits are we seeking? What well-being are we wanting? And how can we actually bring those about so that they're going to be a true benefit to oneself for one's true happiness and well-being? That's so important. You know, one of the reflections that are used in the Tibetan tradition, the foundational practices, I found really very useful, necessary for setting up the intention within the mind, or setting up a clarifying one's intention in the. They're called the mind changings, because they turn the mind toward Dhamma, turn the mind toward that which is beneficial, wholesome. And the first one is the precious human rebirth, recognizing that we have actually. Extraordinarily good fortune being in the, having a human form, having a human body, and that And that the human realm is where Buddhas this is where they teach, and the teachings of the Buddha are still here for us to practice. We have enough difficulties and painful situations to motivate us to want us to get out of it, but we also have access to just the nature of the mind and the way we experience. We have access to happiness, well-being, sublime states of mind. We can experience heavenly states. This is all possible within the human realm. Having that opportunity is a great blessing. It's also where we say, again, this possibility of creating karma is more potent in the human realm. The other realms are more passive in the sense of receiving the fruits of experiencing the fruits of past actions. So whether one is in a celestial realm, it's sort of one is absorbed into the feeling of well-being, or if one's in one of the lower realms, it is one is absorbed into the feeling of difficulty, and one doesn't see much opportunity for making choices and actually implementing action. But the human realm is the place where we can implement action. We can make choices, and those choices have repercussions, particularly for us, ourselves, as well as for others. So that we can be, we can help each other. We can be generous. We can be kind. That we can be compassionate. Those are all options that we can take, and we can act on it. We can engage in activity that is conditioned by those intentions, because the opposite is true as well. So one needs to be very, very aware of the effect of that, recognizing that one has this precious human rebirth, and to use it as skillfully as possible, and to be very circumspect in our actions and speech and our mind. That sense of having the preciousness of human birth. One recognizes that one part of it is all, it goes into the next factor of the are these mind changings of the, and it is impermanent. And this is another aspect: impermanence, change, and the fact that as a human being, we are subject to the laws of impermanence. This is one of the motivating factors of the Buddha for leaving the palace and seeking and going out and practicing as a religious ascetic? Or was that recognizing that being subject to old age, sickness and death, and that this is a very impermanent condition, very unstable? So that impermanence is a factor of our life, and that and it ends in death. It doesn't. It isn't sort of impermanent, and then it sort of continues on forever. You know, one is inevitably separated from everything that one cherishes and loves. And if we haven't really changed our minds, then we and able to create the conditions of wisdom and clarity, then we get stuck in habitual patterns. And that's in this lifetime, and that continues on. So that setting the conditions for our well-being and impermanence is a way to really step back and investigate experience, because you think, well, what isn't impermanent? Whether it's on the realm of our bodies, you see our bodies changing all the time. Our minds, they're even more impermanent. They change even quicker. The world around us, sort of constantly changing. And just the actual world that we live in, the universe, the galaxy that we live in. Just like the other day, we received an email with this very lovely picture of a galaxy that doesn't even have a name, it's a number. It's a whirlpool galaxy, but it is its name. But it's UC985 is what it's called. It didn't seem to have it interacted with UC986 and created this whirlpool effect. And it's 40 million light years away. It's like, what are we seeing? What has changed in 40 million years? we're just seeing the effects of it. That's really fascinating. So that just change, you think of change over 40 million light years, or change over just sort of nanoseconds as the mind is sort of flipping around like crazy. Change constantly happening. So that in the middle of that, do we have a refuge? Do we have a place of abiding where we can not have to be compelled to react out of our desires, attachments, fears, biases? So that then when we see impermanence clearly, then there's a bit more space in the mind to not be drawn into the reactions, into the particularly into that which draws us into negativity. Are the results of our actions going to show up on somebody's computer screen in 40 million light years? And if it is, it would be nice if it was good. No, those choices are being made, and they have their effect. That sense of change and reflections around death, just bringing up that sense of, again, the sense of urgency. There's not really time to waste. There's not really time to make the assumption that everything's gonna. I don't really have to put much effort now because everything's gonna turn all right in the end anyway. That might not be such a great assumption. We do have the opportunity to make make a difference how our choices, and again, that sort of connects with the third of the mind changing is around karma, actions, results of actions. And this is one of the reflections that we're encouraged to do on a daily basis or on a more than daily basis. I'm the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, born of my actions, related to my actions, abide supported by my actions. Whatever I do, whether it's for good or ill, that will be, I'll be the heir to those actions. So that that sense of understanding that we are making the choices. This is what, say, karma is. Intention in the mind. It's not even necessarily just action, how it's performed, but what the intention that comes behind it. The volitional impulse behind it. This is what resonates in the mind and stays in the mind, stays in the mind stream. And where we reap the fruits of that. So that to be bringing awareness to that, we're making choices anyway. Volitional impulses are going on anyway. We're drawn into that, and to bring awareness to that. This is really a part of practice, and what Ajahn Chah emphasized over and over again, whether it was our precepts or whether it was our meditation practice, watching the breath, reflection, investigation, really a lot of it is being able to turn attention and be attentive to intention, volition within the mind, really seeing what the mind is doing. And then seeing what it's choosing, what it's inclining towards. And then, because what it inclines towards is what is going to create the effects in our life. And as I said, they can carry on for a long time. And say, Ajahn Chah gives this lovely image of a wheel, and a wheel is not particularly big, but it can leave a lot of tracks, and the tracks can go on for a long, long ways. So that, and similarly with our mind, we can just small volition, small intentions, small inclinations, but they're they trail behind us, the effects of our choices, the effects of where we incline attention and what we choose to invest energy in, wholesome or unwholesome, and those effects trail on after. So that too, I'll be bringing that up for reflection. And the last of the mind changings is the just the sort of the dissatisfying or the unsatisfactory side of samsara. Not there. This is a samsara literally means the sort of endless round of becoming, birth and death, arising and passing away, of having and then losing, this endless cycle. So that the looking on samsara and experience in a way that we can see how do we see the disadvantage clearly, so that we can relinquish that goal. And that so although it's, how do you say, there is this disadvantage or this unsatisfactory nature to samsara, there's also this precious human rebirth. And it's, we've got this, it seems like a paradox. But it's not, because we do have this opportunity to, if we see clearly. It's like if you're walking along the trail here in Abhayagiri, and you, maybe not in this season, but once it gets warmer, you see a rattlesnake, and you're able to, you don't just sort of walk up to it and try to pet it befriend it, take it back to your dwelling place in a little bag and keep it with you. And you don't have to get into an argument and try to get caught up in fear or aversion. You respectfully give it its space, and may you be happy. And then we can live together, and we do. We have to live together with the rattlesnakes here, there, and various other animals, of which we'll soon have a guide. Jody Paulo's got a new project. Do the footprints of all the little animals that live here in the forest and make up a little sign. But I mean, there's some that you'd like to meet and some that you don't want to meet. So that. But one, lives together harmoniously, and that's the opportunity that we have in the world to live together, bringing up those qualities which are conducive to harmony, which are conducive to well-being, conducive to a sense of peace and clarity. Because if we don't, the alternative is just confusion and suffering. And we're making that choice. We need to be conscious of that. So by using these mind changings, sort of the precious human rebirth, impermanence, karma, the drawbacks of samsara. Then it does turn the mind. It does bring up a sense of urgency, and that sense of urgency is necessary in the sense. And sense of urgency is not, it's not sort of urgency, frantic urgency. It's urgency that is, there is this opportunity to do something truly good, and I can do it. I can put my effort and energy into that which is truly beneficial. So that something like the quality of sangveka, this sense of urgency, is its foundation is really extremely wholesome. I mean, that's why it's actually considered a higher dhamma. Because usually when beings don't see things clearly, sort of living a life of sort of muddled confusion, then that's not aroused. If somebody's doing something urgently, that's not sangveka. It's usually there's a sort of more confusion. But sangveka is coming from a place of clarity and extraordinarily wholesome, because it's seeing the opportunity of dhamma, seeing the opportunity of truth, and that one has the opportunity to exercise that. So that sense of to find ways to arouse that sense of urgency, so that the practice comes to the foreground, or the choices to cultivate the wholesome, the good, that which is supporting wisdom, compassion, supporting peace and tranquility. Those are choices that we can make. And the Buddha gives illustrations of that, being practicing, because with the intention and that sense of clarity of choice, as if your hair were on fire, or in the Buddha's time, if your turban was on fire, and you don't think about it that much. Mm-hmm. It's a very clear. One has a very clear choice, and one can doesn't waste any time doing it. That creating that sense of clarity and urgency in the same way, where one is keeping precepts, practicing sense restraint, developing mindfulness, clear comprehension, cultivating tranquility and reflective investigation. That same sense of purpose. And when we do that, then you find that the results come. I mean, it's just sort of natural. If one puts in the causes, in terms of practicing dhamma, then the results come naturally. Just if you eat food, then you get full. If you walk out in the rain, you get wet. I mean, it's just natural. It's just ordinary. If you put attention on wholesome dhammas, and then the heart becomes very uplifted and bright. It's just ordinary. But we do have to make those choices to cultivate that sense of sangveka, urgency, to offer that for reflection this evening.